Well, good evening, everyone. Let me welcome you here to the London School of Economics for our distinguished guest speaker this evening, Dr. Valentin Inzko. I'm delighted to see so many of you making it along and hoping that we'll have a very interesting evening of discussion about what's happening in Bosnia. As we're all aware, the situation there is never particularly positive, but I think at the moment, you know, there are a number of concerns that have been raised. For anyone who was following, there was a decision that was taken relatively recently by the Supreme Court, which raised questions about a public holiday in Republika Srpska, which has sort of given a yet another hook for nationalists to raise their concern in Republika Srpska. But, you know, there are a number of other issues that are on the horizon. But also at the same time, there's interesting developments that are taking place. I think there's probably mixed feelings about the news that Bosnia is going to apply for EU membership next month. I think a number of people feel that it's premature. But on the other hand, there is a feeling that maybe this is also a chance for the country to show that it is making progress on reform and democratisation. Anyway, I'm sure all of these issues are the sorts of things that you will want to raise this evening with our guest speaker. By way of background, Dr. Inzko is an Austrian diplomat who served for 4 years as ambassador to Slovenia immediately before taking up his appointment as High Representative and EU Special Representative 2009 to 2011 for Bosnia and Herzegovina and taking up that position in March 2009. Dr. Inzko has been involved in Southeast European diplomacy since 1981 when he joined the Austrian Foreign Ministry. He's held various important posts in the Southeast European region and has headed the Foreign Ministry's department responsible for Central Eastern and Southeastern Europe, as well as Central Asia and the Southern Caucasus. Before joining the Foreign Ministry, Dr. Inzko held senior positions with UN Development Programme missions in Mongolia and Sri Lanka. His other diplomatic postings have included serving as the Austrian representative at the United Nations and as the deputy director of the UN Disarmament Mission. Dr. Inzko was born on 22nd of May 1949 in Klagenfurt, Austria, and grew up in a Slovene-speaking household. He studied law and languages at Graz University, specialising in Russian and what was then Serbo-Croat. He subsequently studied at the Diplomatic Academy in Vienna, and the title of his talk this evening is Bosnia and Herzegovina 20 Years After Dayton, Opportunities and Challenges in 2016. Dr. Inzko.
Can we move a little bit forward because of this light? Yes. Yeah, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my great pleasure indeed to be here in the United Kingdom, a country that continues to stand as one of the strongest supporters and most committed countries of Bosnia to help Bosnia and Herzegovina and its people. I'm also thrilled to be here at the London School of Economics, a famous school, of which I heard for the first time about 40 years ago when one of my national professional colleagues, you mentioned Sri Lanka, yeah? She was a Ceylonese lady, Mrs. Santia Pillay. She said that she graduated from the London School of Economics, and this was the first time I heard about this famous school, and of course I'm thrilled to be here today in person. I'm especially pleased to be here in this London School of Economics amongst the many genuine friends here who are very much interested in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Of course, we have a competition of crises, if you like. Maybe you didn't read anything about the Ukraine in the last 2 or 3 months because these events have been taken over by Syria, by the refugee crisis, and especially in my home country, Austria, there's nothing else but just the refugee crisis. Yeah? About more than 1 million people have passed my country, and about 100,000 have in the last year asked for asylum, of course, much more in Germany. But considering our small population, 100,000 is quite a big number. So there's, of course, also little space for Bosnia-Herzegovina. It doesn't appear in CNN. People are not being killed there, fortunately. Yeah. So I'm even more grateful for you, for London School of Economics, you know, to organize such an evening. Of course, maybe you did it also in connection with the 20th anniversary of Dayton. There have been many conferences on this issue. Just last week, I was in the Japanese Institute for Foreign Relations and also in the Foreign Ministry in Japan with the same topic. And, of course, there was a big conference in Dayton itself on the 20th of November on the eve of the anniversary. And Bill Clinton personally attended this conference. As you know, he was one of the fathers of the Dayton Peace Agreement. So I'm very happy to be here to speak about the 20 years of the peace agreement, about challenges, and also about opportunities in 2016. Of course, there are a plethora of serious challenges, many of them not only on Europe's doorstep, which we have now, but also, as Joschka Fischer said, some challenges have now entered our living room. Yeah? And he, of course, spoke about the refugee crisis. It's not some distant problem for Germany. It entered the living room of German citizens. Of course, in such a context, some people think Bosnia does not deserve any more enough attention if we consider the other crises elsewhere. Well, I agree we must prioritize. I believe it would be a mistake not to give Bosnia and Herzegovina the attention it still needs. Yeah? And by the way, in 2014, Mr. Lavrov received Mr. Dodik twice, and also Mr. Putin received Dodik twice. So there is an attention span in certain countries, and I think it's good that also the European Union pays attention to Bosnia and Herzegovina, not only in the past but also in the future. Of course, we have had 20 years of development. I would say that the first 10 years were very successful from the point of view what was achieved, but the last 10 years maybe less, and I think we still have to stay in Bosnia-Herzegovina until it is irreversibly on track for lasting stability and also on the Euro-Atlantic course. And this Euro-Atlantic course is not something which was imposed by international community, but it is a wish of the country itself, of political leadership itself. You mentioned already that Bosnia-Herzegovina will hand over the letter of application. It will be on the 15th of February. It will be the chairman of the presidency of Bosnia-Herzegovina, Mr. Dragan Čović, who is a Croat. And as far as NATO is concerned, there is even a defense law which speaks about rapprochement with NATO, and the first step would be, of course, the membership action plan, which was also agreed by all three constituent people. So a lot of progress has been achieved, but not everything has been done, and a lot of challenges remain. So I think it's an obligation to the people of Bosnia-Herzegovina that we still stay with them. Maybe I should now recapitulate a few of the achievements which happened for the first 10 years in Bosnia-Herzegovina, the first 10 years after Dayton. You must imagine a country with only three ministries. This was the basic government, as agreed in Dayton, with no national flag, no national currency, no national anthem, or if you like, whatever I mentioned now, times three. Yeah, so three national anthems, three national flags, three license plates, and of course also three armies. Yeah, three armies. So nowadays we have one single army. This was maybe one of the biggest achievements of the international community and local actors. Yeah. We have one Ministry of Defense, and altogether we have nine ministries today, compared to three, as I mentioned. Initially, there was, for example, no Ministry of Finances, no Ministry of Transport. We have now nine ministries altogether. But when I was ambassador in Bosnia-Herzegovina, after the war, I came immediately in 1995-96, yeah, immediately after Dayton. It was unimaginable that Bosnia-Herzegovina would have one army, one Ministry of Defense. And it happened the first 10 years. Actually, this ministry is only 10 years old. On the 2nd of December last year, the 10th anniversary was celebrated. And this ministry is quite successful at home. We have had quite some floods, you know, some natural catastrophes. And this ministry helped a lot. And it is also successful abroad. Yeah? I think there are now about six peace missions where Bosnian Army is active. Be it Afghanistan, East Timor, Congo, or elsewhere, at the Golan Heights. So this was a big success, but it was unthinkable in 1995. I, as ambassador, could not imagine that Bosnia-Herzegovina would have one army and one Ministry of Defense, because earlier there were more ministries of defense, obviously. Also, last week in Japan, I had to remind the Japanese people that it was the Nagano Winter Olympics, when for the first time the Bosnian flag was raised, you know, because 3 days earlier there was no flag yet, but there was a small team of Bosnian winter sportsmen, 8 altogether, who wanted to go to Nagano, you know. And then this flag was created, of course, after a lengthy process. It was brought from Sarajevo to Vienna, from Vienna to Tokyo by plane, and then the Olympics could start also with this flag. We have also a national anthem, but if you are Spanish here, some of you, we don't have yet lyrics, you know, like in Spain. No text has been agreed upon, but we have at least the music. Then, it maybe sounds strange to you, there was also no national currency. Or there were 3 national currencies, if you like. And, of course, the 4th currency, the Deutsche Mark. Yeah? And this Deutsche Mark was used as a future currency for Bosnia-Herzegovina. It was just renamed from DM to KM. Now it's called Convertible Mark. And this is one big success story. It's one of the most stable currencies in the region. There is no inflation. And this currency, of course, can now also be changed anywhere in Vienna or Italy, if you like. So this is a big success story. Another big success story is the tax authority. For 10 years, nobody really collected taxes. And we have created the tax authority for the indirect tax collection, which collected for the last 10 years about 28 billion euro, or the double amount in convertible mark. This authority, of course, is highly unpopular because nobody likes to pay taxes, but it's highly successful, and it is a state institution. Yeah. Also, when I was ambassador, when I came to Sarajevo in 1995, you just walked into the state, into the country. There was no border control. Yeah. There were some sandbags at the airport, but you could walk in freely. Now we have a very efficient border police. And if we speak later about foreign fighters, you know, everybody is registered who leaves the country, who comes back, etc. So this is another success story where international community worked together with local authorities. And it's not true. You will hear sometimes everything was imposed, especially by Lord Ashdown, you know. It is not true. Many of these institutions were created together. Many of these institutions have been, the laws have been adopted in the parliament. And even if Mr. Ashdown, you know, Lord Ashdown, imposed something, many times it was later adopted in the state parliament. Yeah. So this was the first 10 years. Of course, we have created much more, but basically this is about the biggest achievements, what I said, you know. But of course, the last 10 years have been a considerable disappointment. The last 10 years, not a single institution has been created. Yeah. So we have zero-sum politics. Politicians are not coming together anymore. And we have to ask ourselves what happened. I think 2 things happened. First of all, there was a huge constitutional changes package on the table in 2006, which unfortunately failed. This package was partly prepared by Lord Ashdown. 2 votes were missing in the parliament, and unfortunately these constitutional changes did not take place. And the second maybe event was that the international community decided after 10 years of success, after 10 years of, if you like it, robust presence of international community decided to have a new philosophy to launch the period of local ownership, the period of local solutions, the period of local accountability, the period of local responsibility. And of course, this is a good philosophy. It worked in the Baltics, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Slovenia, and Poland, and elsewhere. It worked well because people should love their country more, local people, than foreigners. It's obvious, But in Bosnia-Herzegovina, somehow it didn't work, and so we have, for the last 10 years, little local ownership, little local responsibility or accountability. So maybe these 10 years have been lost, the last 10 years, compared to the first 10 years. Of course, I must say now that we are lucky to have Philip Hammond in charge and also Frank-Walter Steinmeier, who have sensed that there something was missing for the last 10 years, and they launched a British-German initiative. This initiative was welcome everywhere, supported by the 28, and this initiative was later renamed to European Initiative, and actually now it's called Reform Agenda. Reform Agenda. And this Reform Agenda will culminate now on the 15th of February in such a way that we will have the letter, the request delivered to the Foreign Affairs Council on the 15th of February, when foreign ministers will assemble in Brussels. There will be also Mogherini and Enlargement Commissioner Hahn. Then this letter will be handed over on the 15th of February. Of course, we can ask ourselves many questions, whether this is not too early and whether this is now the right moment to do so or not. In any case, the Dutch, who are now the presidency country, they have agreed to the 15th of February, and also the Commission and External Action Service, they have agreed that Bosnia-Herzegovina can hand over the letter of application for membership. This, of course, does not mean that Bosnia-Herzegovina will be a member soon. Yeah? This does not mean that Bosnia-Herzegovina will be a candidate soon. But now the letter will be handed over, the questionnaire will follow, and Bosnia-Herzegovina will have to answer about 5,000 questions, you know, like every country, you know. And once these questions are answered, then, of course, the process will start of assessment and so on, and hopefully Bosnia-Herzegovina will get the candidate status soon. We are happy that we have in the region candidates already, like Montenegro, like especially Serbia. Serbia has a big positive influence on Bosnia-Herzegovina. Some chapters have been opened in Serbia, and Serbia is actually now the darling of the international community, especially Prime Minister Vucic, who just announced new elections in Serbia. His influence is very big in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and as you know, he visited the country last year four times. So you see there's a new dynamic in relations between Bosnia-Herzegovina and Serbia, and of course not unnoticed was his visit to Srebrenica on the 11th of July last year, when stones were thrown at him and bottles, etc. But when he came back to Belgrade, he immediately invited the state presidency to visit Belgrade. So there was no revenge, but there was a gesture of reconciliation. Yeah. He came back to Bosnia-Herzegovina the fourth time on 11th of November to a Srebrenica investment conference, and he immediately pledged 5 million euro for Srebrenica. Yeah? He had a good philosophy that Srebrenica, of course, is a place where we will always remember the past, but Srebrenica should all be also a place for the future, where people can find work, you know. And those of you who speak Russian or Serbian or Bosnian know that it means Silver City, Srebrenica. And it was called in Roman times, Romans already were in Srebrenica, it was called Argentum, like Argentina, yeah? The Silver Land, because there are coal mines and silver mines and other mines in Srebrenica. So Vucic came four times altogether to Srebrenica, sorry, to Bosnia four times, to Srebrenica twice. He also came in an unprecedented visit with the whole government from Belgrade. The Belgrade government came to Sarajevo government. Yeah, so we have this huge influence. Of course, also Croatia. Croatia didn't have a government now for 2 or 3 months, but whatever happens in the neighborhood, it has also an impact, of course, in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And this pull factor of European Union, which is now very strong in Serbia, we hope that it will also spread to Bosnia-Herzegovina, and especially after the 15th of February. So there is, of course, after 10 years, if you like, lost 10 years, we have now again a ray of hope after this initiative of the Brits and the Germans, and there's a reason for optimism that this European agenda will kick off some reforms. I know that there's a huge debate in the United Kingdom about the future of membership of Britain in the European Union. I do not want, as a foreigner, you know, to comment on this, but of course you would lose a market of 500 million people, et cetera, et cetera. But this is not up to me. It's up to the British people In any case, in Bosnia-Herzegovina and in the Balkans, European Union still is attractive. Yeah? In member states like Austria, it's less attractive. Yeah? We are criticizing European Union, especially we are criticizing Brussels. Yeah? We are not against the European idea because it's important, it's necessary. We have many problems, global problems, which we cannot solve alone, whether it's refugee crisis, climate problems, etc. Yeah? But we are critical of the bureaucracy in Brussels. Yeah? But in the Balkans, everybody still speaks about Europe. Europe for many people in the Balkans means prosperity, but also rule of law, you know. And people think also about the fate of the former Croat Prime Minister, Sanada, who had to go to prison. And this is for many people rule of law. This is Europe, you know, values. So Bosnian people and others in the region dream of Europe, dream of belonging to this family. In a way, of course, Bosnia-Herzegovina and its people have always been Europeans. And if you consider the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1496, yeah, 500 years ago, they were received warmly in the Ottoman Empire, including Sarajevo. So in Sarajevo, there were always four religions, you know, the Spanish Jews, the Orthodox Church and its people, the Catholics, and of course the Bosniaks. So to tell somebody in Sarajevo or in Bosnia-Herzegovina, can you live together, you know, with Bosniaks or with Serbs or with Jews, you know, it's ridiculous because there was no other life. They lived always together. In Sarajevo and many other cities, Doboj or so, there were always places of four religions. Yeah? And the Jews are still living in Sarajevo. Unfortunately, there are very few. But they still speak their old Spanish, Judeo-Espanol, the same language as Cervantes spoke. Yeah? And this is still a place where you can find these traditions and this spirit. And of course, this is why people always felt to be European, multicultural, you know, open. And it's nothing special if you say now to a Bosnian, yeah, you have to be tolerant or you have to live with other religious, yeah? Religions. People always did in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So maybe a few challenges which we are facing. You know, I mentioned already the refugee crisis. Then, of course, the scourge of terrorism. Quite a few fighters have gone from Bosnia-Herzegovina to Syria, not so many as from Britain, you know, but I think about 200. Of course, Bosnia is smaller, yeah. But believe me, those people who are most afraid of radical Islam in Bosnia are the Muslims of Bosnia, because Bosnian Islam is traditionally very tolerant. As I said, they received the Jews 500 years ago. Intermarriage is normal, you know. To drink alcohol or whatever, I mean, it's nothing special. This is a normal way of life. And also they have lived from the very beginning, they have lived together with Christians because Islam came later. Yeah. So this is a secularized, Europeanized, tolerant Islam. And we have in Austria about 500,000 Muslims. It's now the second religion. Of course, many are Turks. But quite a few of them are Bosnians, and they have integrated quite well in Austria. Yeah. We have over 1 million foreigners, but these people from Bosnia-Herzegovina statistically have integrated best. Yeah. So this Islam is something special. Also, Austria had recognized the Islam in 1912 because there was this Austro-Hungarian Empire. We integrated the Muslims from the very beginning because it was part of our empire. So this terrorism is a problem and Bosniaks or Muslims are most scared of it. Yeah. Then another problem is of course high unemployment, especially amongst youth. It is about 70%. Yeah. So many of these young people go abroad. Nothing special to you, but they are very successful abroad. For example, the new Minister of Education in Sweden, she's 27, she's from Foča, Aida Haji Alic, she is Minister of Education in Sweden. She couldn't find a job at home and she went to Sweden, you know. Or Armin Kahelic, she was received last year in the House of Lords here. Yeah. She served in the cabinet of William Hague. and now she's Baroness. Maybe at home she wouldn't be even a mayor or deputy mayor, or in a cabinet of a municipal chief or whatever, you know. Or Dzeko, you know Dzeko? He played for the Manchester City. Was the former director of Austria Telekom, Boris Nemtsov. He was one of the most successful telecom directors in Austria. Was the best engineer last year in Boeing. He also comes from Bosnia-Herzegovina, and so on and so on. I, of course, am sorry. There's people that they are not staying at home, and to give this intelligence, to give this knowledge and this spirit, you know, of innovation to their own country. But of course, once you can't get it at home, if you're Austrian, like Schwarzenegger, yeah, you go to California. Many Bosnians are going abroad, you know. It's like this. So a lot of things have to be changed that people would stay at home, especially the best. Yeah. Now maybe a few lessons learned. Maybe if you study politics or political science, you're interested in lessons learned. Lesson one, of course, is sound obvious, but it's not, you know. The unity of the international community, its greatest strength, the unity. Take Syria, for example, now the Kurds have not been invited to the conference on Syria. So unity is very important, you know. And of course, equally, when international community is divided, this is its biggest weakness. Lesson two, we have to have a common vision. When we, for example, established a common Minister of Defense in Bosnia-Herzegovina, there was this vision of Euro-Atlantic integration. And this was a strong pull factor, you know. Thirdly, reintegration is important and functionality. This was indeed a big issue for the first 10 years. Now we have forgotten it a little bit. But reintegration and functionality is very important. And I must differentiate here. Functionality and reintegration doesn't mean centralization. There will be no centralization in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Bosnia is highly decentralized. We have 14 governments, yeah, maybe more than the United Kingdom, but it will always be decentralized. Yeah. But functionality must be strengthened, functionality and reintegration. Yeah. Then, of course, the international community should maybe sometimes a little bit clearer, should give clearer guidance and should be maybe sometimes more prescriptive. If we think something is good, something is important, prescribe it and don't just say you have a choice A, B, C, and D, and then something will come out, you know. Sometimes it doesn't work. You have to be more prescriptive. Sorry. Like European Union told Greece, you know, what to do in financial area. It was prescriptive, or IMF, yeah. Then also, I think we should be a little bit more relaxed as far as constitutional reform is concerned. Many people are of the opinion constitutional reform will bring disadvantages to one ethnicity or to another ethnicity. Yeah. This is not, of course, the case. First of all, for constitutional changes, all three constituent people must agree. Secondly, we have had already a constitutional change when Brčko became a district. Yeah? People tend to forget, you know, nothing has happened. So constitutional changes will come, but it's also true that all constitutional changes or efforts so far have failed. Maybe time was not ripe yet. Yeah? But we should not be afraid of constitutional changes. The sky will not collapse, you know, if we do have some. But of course, time is not yet ripe. Then, of course, one lesson which we maybe underestimated or forgot, rule of law is very important. Yeah. I think also, as far as refugee crisis is concerned from Africa, international community has failed in two areas. First of all, development aid was not successful. Otherwise, people would stay at home if they would have a modest standard of living. And if there was a rule of law in their own countries, I think they would stay at home. Because if you are poor, if you don't have wealth, you know, but you know you are a decent society, there is justice in your society, you stay at home, you know. So rule of law. And maybe what we have underestimated also I'm sorry to say also as member of the international community, we have paid too much attention to military power, military security after the war. Obviously, 100,000 people have been killed, and military security was very important. 60,000 soldiers maintained military security, disarmament, etc. But we did not pay enough attention to human security. Yeah? What the French did and the Germans after war, reconciliation and education, including rule of law, as I said. This is very important, you know, human security. And as far as reconciliation is concerned, the French and the Germans made a huge effort. Now, it's nothing special to meet French diplomats in Berlin, to meet German diplomats on the Quai d'Orsay, you know, in Paris, or in other ministries, and thousands and tens of thousands of French learn the German language and vice versa, you know. So this should have been a concept also in Bosnia-Herzegovina, where many people in Banja Luka, young people, have never been to Sarajevo, even teachers, you know. And even worse, some young people from, say, Western Mostar, yeah, and Mostar is a bridge city, Most is a bridge, you know, have never crossed the bridge to Eastern Mostar. Yeah? Very sad. So reconciliation and education are very important as a lesson, you know, because, of course, you need people like Adenauer, like French politicians who supported this reconciliation effort. And now, of course, it's unimaginable to consider Europe without this German and French friendship. Yeah. So my concluding remarks will be short. I think we created some positive dynamic in Bosnia-Herzegovina, especially after the war. I think this positive dynamic can come back. We can bring about genuine improvements for the citizens with this European, earlier British-German initiative. And we have sustained these developments. Gradually they will come, and maybe we should speed it up a little bit, but we have now really a good chance to take a fresh look at Bosnia-Herzegovina, especially after the 15th of February. The Bosnia-Herzegovina has a future. They have talented people. They have many potentials. They have a lot of natural resources. But as I mentioned already, they have a lot of human resources. And I think there's good reason to look forward to the next 10 years in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And I hope this will be a Euro-Atlantic decade. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. We actually have about half an hour now for questions. What I'll do is I'll probably try and take two or three together. If you could be relatively brief, and please identify
yourself.
Very
brief also.
Well, no, you can speak as long as you like, but if you could perhaps identify yourself as well. I see a gentleman there, please.
John Morvick, I was the chief engineer at the time of the change and led the programme to put Rose Bridges railway lines back together. I've been involved in Bosnia for 20 years since, and last summer I went down and travelled around and talked to people, having since learned the language, and I didn't find any uplifting comments by anybody. I found the international community was treated with contempt. I took an agronomist with me to look at agriculture. I myself have a background in forestry. There is really an awful lot to do to provide employment in those rural industries. We should have done a Marshall Plan. We've ended up with a Morgenthau Plan, but there's disease in the milk and all sorts of things. It's a catastrophe. In one area, it should be really good. So, firstly, not much uplift in anybody I talk to. Contempt for the international community. And agriculture and forestry, which should be the mainstays of the economy, are not in good order.
Fully agree with you. I'll answer briefly, you know. I know that people are dissatisfied with the international community, with me also, yeah. But as I said, about 10 years ago, we decided less local ownership or local responsibility. And it didn't really work. Now, agriculture, I think this is one of the biggest potential of Bosnia-Herzegovina, and there would be organic agriculture. Of course, unfortunately, there was war, but the landscape is clean, you know. And indeed, in, say, berry production, strawberries and so on, they're already number 16 in Europe. Yeah? But if you go, say, for example, from Sarajevo to Srebrenica, these are some 160 kilometers, you will not see five cows, you know. You see a few sheep, yeah. So there's nothing, and this is a wonderful landscape. There could be a lot of this. And you said, indeed, there should be a Marshall Plan for rural industry, and maybe we should speak later to it about this bilaterally, okay? I'm quite interested in your ideas, yeah. Next.
I'm actually keeping an eye out, but I do have an initial cluster just over there. So if anyone at the back there wants to ask a question, Nevin.
Okay. My question is Nevin Anjelic, Regency University, London. Basically, you mentioned multiculturalism and glorified it in Bosnia. Angela Merkel said multiculturalism is dead. David Cameron said multiculturalism is dead. The last three British prime ministers said multiculturalism is dead. Is there space for Bosnia-Herzegovina in the European Union if multiculturalism is dead? And just another brief question. A leading politician has just been arrested in Sarajevo, and his fellow colleagues are competing in offering him support and putting pressure on judiciary to set him free to defend himself from freedom. Isn't it political pressure on judiciary? And isn't it time for international community to actually act? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Fully agree with you. You know, judiciary is under heavy pressure. There was today a huge statement by the court of BIH about unbearable pressure on judiciary. And there's also one example of one constitutional court judge. He had to resign later. He wrote a letter and he said, "Dear boss," he wrote to a party chairman. He said, "Dear boss," a constitutional court judge, you know. So, but even without this big love to the party boss, there is pressure, believe me. And you can also buy sometimes, if you have enough money, a deputy. Yeah? But we have to support independence of judiciary, absolutely. If you don't have rule of law, you don't have a country, you know. And I fully agree with you. About multiculturalism, in Bosnia, this is something natural. As I told you, there were always four religions and four groups in Bosnia-Herzegovina. You have also in some cities like Prnjavo, 16 minorities, yeah, Czechs and Slovaks and Ukrainians and so on. But huge damage was done during the war to this multiculturalism. And now, basically, when refugees return home, they return to majority areas, yeah? Serbs to Serb areas, Bosniak to Bosniak areas, Croat to Croat areas, yeah? So part of this fabric is destroyed, but multiculturalism still lives, and maybe if we have more time, I will give later some three beautiful examples of multiculturalism between Orthodox people and Bosniaks. Next.
Bernard.
Bernard Casey from LSE. I wanted to ask about reconciliation and integration, but referring it back to the major achievement, which was the creation of a single army. Now, 40, 50 years ago, people defended national service in this country on the grounds that if you did national service, it brought people from very different physical locations, but also from a very different social classes together. It was the difference of social class that was particularly mentioned. Does the single national army actually serve any of this reconciliation process, which was the biggest defense that one actually had for national service from people who otherwise did not tend to support such an institution? Is there a role for it? Can it do this? And if it is not doing this after 10 years or so, why not?
It's doing it in an excellent way. And if Serbs and Bosniaks and Croats from Bosnia-Herzegovina go to Afghanistan or East Timor or whatever, they work together in an excellent way. Yeah, and I think this is also a nucleus. Once they come back from Afghanistan, they are friends, you know. And they tell everybody we work together. And of course, you should know Serbian, Bosnian, and Croat language is the same language. Yeah, it's like Austrian and German. Of course, we have specific expressions, you know, in Austria. But grammar-wise, it's the same language. But of course, there are different cultures. The Serbs are Orthodox, you know. Croats are Catholics. And Bosniaks are Muslims, but many are atheists, you know. Even if you have the name Muhammad or Mustafa, you can be an atheist or an agnostic, yeah. But army brings them together, and they are just professionals, yeah. If you are in a demining unit from Bosnia-Herzegovina in Afghanistan, You just work together. You make your job professionally. Yeah, and I think this integrative factor is working. But of course, we cannot expect miracles overnight. Yeah.
Gentleman up at the back there. Again, I'm keeping an eye out. So if you could just make, if you've got any questions, just let me know and I'll mark you down.
My name is Dusan Mašić. I initiate 7,000 initiative to commemorate 20 years of genocide in Srebrenica in Belgrade that was banned by Serbian government this July. I have two questions. First one, do you see Bosnia today as a post-conflict or pre-conflict country, or are we closer to the next war or further from the previous one? And the second one is, how do you see the role of Prime Minister Vučić? Is he the part of the problem or the part of the solution for the future of Bosnia? Thank you.
Thank you. What was the first question about conflict?
Are we further from the past conflict or closer to the next?
Okay. Yes, I would say we are farther from the conflict. People are tired of conflicts. They don't want to fight anymore. And I cannot imagine any conflict to break out unless somebody would like to break up the country, whatever. But otherwise, people really want to live peacefully. Memories are still alive, you know. Mass graves are still being opened on a monthly basis almost. In Srebrenica, only half of the people killed have been buried. And we have every 11th of July, every year we have these ceremonies in Srebrenica. But of course, also in the Serb part, they also are unearthing Serb victims, etc. So nobody wants to fight anymore. People are really tired. So I think conflict will not break out, and hopefully it will not. I would say people don't want this, yeah, to fight again. But as far as Prime Minister Vučić is concerned, I think his role is positive. I mentioned earlier that he visited Bosnia-Herzegovina last year four times, you know. I don't think he visited any other country four times last year, maybe Brussels, yeah. Also, he did a good job in the refugee crisis, because also through Serbia there were about, I don't know, 800,000 refugees who went through. He's provided free transport by train or by buses, you know, and he also opened some centers for the refugees, yeah. And now we will see the elections again in Serbia this year. They were just announced, and most probably he will win, but this is not up to me to decide or to assess, you know. In any case, if you would look at his actions, and especially his statements, yeah, they're all very correct. They're all supporting Bosnia's territorial integrity and sovereignty, and he's here very consistent. Of course, at the same time, he is stressing his love, yeah, this is his word, for Republika Srpska. But he would always stress that Bosnia-Herzegovina, as a factor of stability in the region, should be a sovereign country, and its territorial integrity should be maintained. Yeah.
Ivan, I believe.
Thank you. My name is Iva Tomic. I'm visiting fellow here at the LSE. Born and raised in Bosnia and Herzegovina, but decided to leave because I saw no future for me there. However, I have three very brief questions. You mentioned rule of law and the example of Prime Minister Sanader in Croatia, and the gentleman over there mentioned this big political arrest a few days ago or weeks, I don't know. How you comment on this? Is this somehow connected specifically to the date you mentioned, 15th of February, with the letter of application for the EU? So is this somehow connected just to show, okay, we are doing this, or do you see this as a functioning of judiciary system and internal affairs and everything else? So that's one. The other one, you mentioned the problem of terrorism, and you said that only a few people from Bosnia actually went to Syria. But we are all witnesses of really extremist groups in some of the Bosnian villages who are coming up more often in the public with different, how to say, really extremist messages, not violent so far. How do you look on that? And what is the position of international community on this process? And the last question concerns the Croatian part of the country. We see a really loud part of this creation group. I don't know how big they are, that are searching for, they call it a third entity in the country. Even the party which is in the government right now, HDZ, in their pre-election campaign, actually supported this. So, what is the position of international community on this? Thank you.
I think on the first question, the state prosecutor did step up indeed his activity, but we can see it since half a year or so. I wouldn't relate it to the 15th of February, to the date of application. I wouldn't say so. They have also speeded up their actions against war criminals. You know, they have apprehended several hundred or raised accusations against them. So I think this is a process which goes on now for half a year, 1 year. But of course, never such a prominent politician was put into prison. Maybe for you who are not experts on Bosnia-Herzegovina, the so-called Bosnian Berlusconi was put to prison, you know, yesterday or the day before yesterday. Yeah. But of course, a fair trial is necessary. State prosecutor should work professionally, and there's a presumption of innocence, you know. But I don't want to comment this issue because authorities are working now. Yeah. But I wouldn't see a link to the 15th of February unless the state prosecutor has seen a link, but he didn't tell me, you know. But we will see later. About terrorism and Wahhabis, as I said, Muslims in Bosnia-Herzegovina are also afraid of them. Apparently there are 2,000 or 3,000 Wahhabis in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And we have heard now quite clear statements from the Islamic community, from their bishop, if you like, the supreme, Reis Ulema. He and also today another one said, nobody can teach anymore in Bosnia-Herzegovina without a diploma from the Islamic community, yeah, because there were some sort of parallel majlises or communities which were created in the past, parallel Islamic communities, you know. So nobody can teach in future anymore or use a mosque unless he has a permission from the Islamic community. So this is quite clear, and of course everybody has to obey with local law and with the Islamic community. I think so far about 200 have gone to Syria. Some of them have come back. Some have been put into prison, I think 10 or 20 or so so far. And this is under strict control of the Minister of Security, who is a Serb. So he's putting an eye on this, Wahhabis. But as long as they respect the law, local law, as long as they don't follow Sharia or so, I think they can believe what they want. But both Islamic community and the state are watching these developments. The third question about the third entity, you know that the Croats would like to have a third entity, basically Herzegovina, because the Serbs have an entity, the Croats would like also to have one. But I'm sorry to say the Croats have given up their own entity twice. Yeah? First, there was a Washington Agreement. They did have Republika Herceg-Bosna, it was called. Yeah? They gave it up in the Washington Agreement, and they also gave it up in the Dayton Agreement. Nobody asked in Dayton for a separate entity. Yeah. In any case, what now seems possible, but it is only party talks, you know, between Bosniaks and Croats, an idea, you know, that for 24 hours there would be a special electoral unit just for one day, when basically the Croats could, in this electoral unit, elect their own member of the state presidency. Because in the past, in the Federation, everybody could elect a Croat. If you are a Muslim or if you are an Orthodox or if you are a Croat, doesn't matter. Everybody could vote for a Croat member of the presidency. And most probably the previous member of the state presidency, a Croat, was twice basically elected by Bosniaks, by Muslims. Yeah. So the Croats are now asking for this special electoral unit for one day. But it is still early days. It is still early days to speak about this electoral unit. At the moment, it's just an idea. Yeah. Otherwise, the Croats have got their own cantons. They are calling them Županije. Yeah. And we have about 10 cantons in Bosnia-Herzegovina in the Federation, and I think 4 or 5 are with Croat majority. So there's a lot of possibilities, you know, to develop these cantons. And why shouldn't be a canton like a small Singapore, you know, or small California? There is sunshine, there is warm weather. You should use your own potentials and possibilities which you have under the current system, you know, which gives all the opportunities. You should know, if you are not experts, you know, Bosnia, these cantons have parliaments, you know. They have ministries, 10 or 12 ministries, yeah. So they have all possibilities to develop. But, of course, the other wish, you know, to have, say, five cantons united into an entity, it's not realistic at the moment, and people would lose a lot of time in pursuing this idea. But I would wish that the cantons are really successful, that they are competing with each other, who has a better police, who has a better television, you know, who has a better schools, who has better hospitals, you know, why not, yeah? This should be the competition, and time should be used for such visions, you know. Next.
Misha Gavrilovic, I'm from former Yugoslavia and a Serb. If I understood you correctly, you stated that no constitutional changes can be made in Bosnia unless all three constituent people agreed with that.
Yes.
Now, that is precisely, of course, the situation that existed in the former Yugoslav Republic of Bosnia and Herzegovina. It worked very well. All constitutional changes were made on the basis of 3-0, not on two ganging up against one, which actually occurred when the European Community in the beginning of 1992 asked for a referendum to take place, and when in fact two went for it and the other one was against. So Bosnia was recognized in a conflict situation because 2-1 is conflict by definition. It didn't have a 3-0. And that led to the war. Number one question, is the European Union now, and the European Community in those days still had the major countries, it was a 12-member country, then have they recognized that this has been a fault for them to recognize a country in such a conflict situation? And secondly, your statement that all three constituent peoples have to agree to changes, but changes have been made without all of them agreeing to it. The very latest one, in fact, was over this National Day of the Republika Srpska, the 9th of January. That was brought by three foreign judges that were introduced into the Constitutional Court by two Bosnian judges agreeing on a majority decision whereby it was opposed by both the Croats and the Serbs. That doesn't suggest to me that this all three constituent peoples have to agree. So we seem to be back into this conflict situation. I don't think that I would have thought the Office of the High Representative could have intervened on that. And